Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
Nah, we're not starting like that.
Why?
No, let's go. Let's do this the right way.
What a good be. Hoping this will be this your boy, N-O-R-E.
Hold up, hold up. It's your boy, DJ EFN, and this is Bleachers!
We, our intro doesn't include making noise. That's why it sucks.
Yeah!
And he comes in with a catchphrase.
Why does it have to be abuse right away?
Go ahead, do your cute intro. Go ahead.
No, that was it. We're done.
Anyway, listen, I'm Cypher Sounds.
I'm Peter Rosenberg.
And we're from Wind Up Is Life, the first ever hip-hop podcast ever. Ever first.
But we're joined by the most successful hip-hop podcast.
Successful.
That's right. N-O-R-E and DJ EFN.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by an incredible cast of legends to celebrate hip-hop 50.
Yeah.
We got newcomers who are going to be legends. We have absolute icons in our midst. EFN, this is a crazy collection of people.
This is wild right here. We got pioneers. We got people doing it right now. The game hasn't stopped. Hip-hop is 50 years old right now.
50 years old. We're calling this 50 sips, ladies and gentlemen, because we're getting drunk.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay.
I'm hip-hop.
Okay. Toast to that.
Yeah, toast to that.
Cheers. Toast to hip-hop.
Whose crazy idea was this panel?
It's a great idea,
Nori. It's a conglomeration of some Monster Energy.
Was it did Monster go in the boardroom and say, let's just do some fucking crazy shit?
Yeah.
That's how they sounded, too.
Yeah, that's how they sounded. It's like, let's put everybody together, like, from every generation. Whose idea was, I thought you was going to claim it, Rosenberg, no?
No, I'm happy to claim it.
Okay.
But I would be utterly lying. Now, this is super exciting. Okay. EFN, can you announce the man sitting next to you, please? This is crazy, man.
Legend.
Grandmaster Caz does not need an introduction.
You have to.
You can, it's like, hip-hop is officially here if Grandmaster Caz is in the building.
That's right. That's
I mean, I may be the only one that was 50 years.
You're really the only one.
You don't look.
You look fantastic. What about introduce who's next to you?
I mean, guys, we're talking about the original female MC, a B-girl going back to 1976. Sha Rock, ladies and gentlemen.
But also,
Also, let me add that to you. 1977, I became the first female MC of hip-hop culture. Yeah. Before Records. Before 1979.
Wow.
That's my sister. We on Rock the Bells Radio Monday through Friday.
Yeah, that's right. Every single day. Let me just start. Before we get to all these other introductions, I do want to start with you guys, the OGs, the true OGs here. How has Hip Hop 50 been treating you so far? Have you been enjoying the celebration?
Most definitely. We've been on radio for about almost 2 years now. And so we chronologically go over the history of the culture on a regular since we've been on the radio. That's what our show is about. And this year has been amazing. I mean, we saw it coming, you know, we talked about it, but actually when it came in, everything came to fruition. And it's like, you know, we just hope that it continues in year 51, yeah. Like we talked about earlier. This is important. This is a milestone. Yeah. And this is going to be our first 50th and our last 50th.
Because okay. We're not going to be around to see another 50.
We will not be here for the next one. So it's extra special to us.
Yeah. My thing is that, and this is what I want everybody to understand. When we're talking about the 50th anniversary of hip hop culture, there is no way that we are supposed to be just celebrating the rap aspect of hip hop culture.
Right. Yeah.
The culture and all its aesthetics of hip hop culture, all the elements is the DJ, the B-girl, the B-boy, the graffiti artist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The MC. We are supposed to be celebrating. And for everybody that's watching this show right now, if you're not celebrating all of those aspects, you are not representing hip-hop culture to its fullest. Mm. You're not.
These guys came with an agenda.
I like this.
This is something that I preach all the time. This is something that I preach all the time. And my thing is that you don't have to be out there B-girl and B-boy, and, you know, but the DJ, the MC, we're all celebrating. These are what encompass what hip-hop right. is. These are the elements right. that is called hip-hop. From the time that Keith Cowboy first coined the name Keith hip-hop culture, this is what hip-hop is about. And yeah. so when you hear, you know, the aesthetics, and you hear some people, you know, saying, ho, or you saying, yes, yes, y'all, you got to know where that came from.
Yeah.
You got to understand the history behind it. So there's no gender there. It's just the history of the culture that we're celebrating 50 years of hip-hop, and you got to know what that means and it entails. Mm. Bottom line.
Blake, make some noise for that. Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I feel, you know, like you said, the four elements, DJing, graffiti, MCing, and then breaking.
And later on, they added knowledge, beatboxing. Right. That came later. But those are the four core elements that encompass what hip-hop is.
Mm-hmm. And I feel breaking sometimes gets treated lesser on the totem pole. So we got a B-boy legend, B-boy Moy, in the building. Yeah. Who's had some been part of taking breaking to the Olympics. Yeah. So, bro, come on, man.
Yo, man, first off, I just want to say it's an honor and a blessing to be surrounded by legends in the game. You know, I started breaking in 95, but to be surrounded by so much history, I mean, honestly, I get chills, you know, to be here and to just elevate the culture and where breaking is going with now Paris 2024 and breaking now being on the Olympic platform. I think breaking is finally going to receive that reinforcement that is always needed, because back in the 80s, I mean, it was definitely seen in movies like Flashdance or documentaries like Style Wars, and breaking was elevating the culture in so many ways, but the breaker was always getting pushed back in the back burner. But you know, thanks Chirac for bringing that to light, because, you know, the B-boys and the B-girls, you know, were a big piece of the culture and it got to be combined together and reinforced. And I just love that, just the concept and the idea of hip hop culture growing and to be a part of it. Man, it's a true blessing.
Well, it was hard to see B-boying and breaking, because think about it, like the DJ, it plays the music and it's part of foundation. The MC's original job was to
big up
the DJ. Right. And then you take graffiti, where your goal was for the graffiti to be seen everywhere. So that's why they put it literally on a train so it would move around the city, how it was breaking represented. You know what I'm saying? So now it's going to be in the Olympics and on the main screen. It's going to show a whole nother level of
look, the B-boys, the B-girls, they don't exist without the DJ. Yeah. They don't exist without the MC. They don't exist without the artwork. All together, it paints a beautiful picture. Yeah. And I just hope that the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, can really reinforce that, because you know, the opportunity of being part of a big platform, you know, everyone is a little, has a little fear that the essence of hip hop culture might be diluted. But it's important for people like us to kind of voice our thoughts and opinions and kind of bring that that expertise to the table and make sure that we go out there and do that. You know,
I just want to see what commentators they have from NBC calling the break.
That's the conversation we had, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I'm a B-girl in 1976, right? And so, of course, you know, Kool Herc, 73, you know, father of hip-hop. We coined him the father of hip-hop because, you know, he had the A1 B-boys, the Keith and Kevin, which, you know, was called the legendary Lynn Twins, and they changed their name, you know, recently, right? No, for real. And then you had Trixie, the first B-boy.
Yeah.
I'm laughing at what you said, that his face was like, oh, no, that's what they were called by Coco Rock back in the days, you know, the first MC. So we knew them as the Lynn Twins, but as they got older.
How'd you know them as Rosalind?
The twins. Thank you, Bob. They recently changed the name.
But the thing is, what I'm saying is, like you said, you know, as far as the B-girls and the B-boys, and we'll get to the graffiti, you know, how they intertwine with hip-hop, you know, in general. But yeah, the B-boys and B-girls are underground. And my thing has always been, listen, if they go into the Olympics, you got to know where it came from. And yes, people like to say, oh, B-boyism, B-girlism started back, you know, in the 30s, you know, when you had, you know, different older people, you know, breakdancing. But we're talking about hip-hop culture. Mm-hmm. And Cass has this saying that, you know, hip-hop didn't invent anything. We reinvented everything.
Right, everything.
So I hate when people come, yeah, well, it started in the 30s and it started in the 40s. No, hip-hop was reinvented and all of those elements were reinvented, yeah, you know, to make up the culture of hip-hop.
Yeah.
So I would like to see, and we talked about that, of how breakdancing is going to, or B-girlism or B-boyism is going to, how it's going to affect, you know, I want to see it taken from the beginning to how it is now.
And one thing we got to note is that I don't think hip-hop would have grown internationally the way it did without the B-boys and B-girls and graffiti, because before they understood the lyrics, they was dancing to the music.
Dancing
and they was tagging up.
It's none without the other.
Right.
I can't wait to see the Bulgarian Olympic B-boy team. They're gonna kill
No, I heard they're killing
it. Bulgarians are fire.
No, yeah, you gotta watch out for Bulgaria.
Because we started with the Uproxx. The Uproxx in the 70s was the Uproxx, and then it progressed, you know, to the Floor Moves and all of that.
Maybe
stuff.
They'll create a sequel to, like, Cool Runnings.
Right. About the Bulgarian B-boy team? Yeah. That'll be something. Scythe.
Rodenberg, you can shout out the Bulgarian twins. You shout out the Bulgarian twins.
Love the Bulgarian twins. Scythe, if only we had someone here from the graph world to, you know, explain the graffiti side.
You mean the OG LA graffiti legend Risk? Right?
Oh! Thanks, I'm like a fly on the wall here, man. I'm just listening to everything. It's an honor to be here. This is fucking amazing.
Risk, can you tell us a little bit about your origin story and when you went to New York from LA for the first time?
Yeah, man. So, you know, I was introduced to graffiti from someone from New York, and I saw the trains and Style Wars and, you know, subway art. That was like the Bible to us, stuff like that. And all I wanted to do was paint trains, right? So we didn't have trains. I went and painted some freight trains. That wasn't the same feeling. I graduated high school. I hitchhiked that day to New York to hit trains. And I was like, I was on a mission.
I'm sorry, what is exactly hitchhiking? What is exactly that game?
Well, you put your thumb up and look for a ride.
I thought that was just on TV. Yeah. People really do it.
I didn't even get out of Hollywood. Someone's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm hitchhiking New York to paint trains. He goes, you're fucking stupid. He goes, take my car. I'm like, what? He's an actor. He goes, I'll pay you to drive the car. I said, great. So it was a little easier. But I made it to New York, and I met some great legendary dudes, Ghost and Vin and Reese and Ket and Chino and all these dudes within like 5 minutes of getting to New York. And they're like, what are you doing? I told them, they said, that's fucking wild. They go, you're going to get killed. You're fucking out of your mind. And they hooked me up, man. And they took me in, and they took me into all the yards and the trains, and we started painting. I met Lee and all these dudes, and went to Henry's studio, and it was fucking amazing. And that was my introduction to graffiti, to becoming, like, on the platform of graffiti with all these giants, so to speak. And I was always embraced by New York, and I was a West Coast dude, and I have a New York style. And that's where it came from. That's how it started, you know? I was started in 83. And, yeah, love it. Love the art form. I appreciate every aspect of it. I appreciate every aspect of hip-hop. you know.
And let me co-sign with you, sir. When you talk about graffiti art, a lot of people like to say, okay, so graffiti, you know, it was had their own section, right? Yeah. But how it came into play with hip-hop culture is because you had the people like Buddy Esquire, who was the king of flyers in New York, and then you had Anthony Rowley, and then you had other, you know, artists, you know, that were painting on the trains in New York City. And what happened was in 1978, switched the whole game of graffiti coming into play with hip-hop culture. And how that started was is that they took what they were doing on the trains and transitioned it to flyers. And so that's how, and a lot of people say, okay, well, hip-hop, you know, graffiti is not flyers, but that's how it came into play with hip-hop through the graph artists that were painting on the trains, like the Buddy Esquires and Anthony Rowley's, that would transfer that information over to flyer makers. And so Buddy Esquire became the first graffiti artist, you know, that make flyers. He was a part of my group, the Funky 4+1 and the Brothers Disco. And he began to start making flyers for every single group artist that was out there, you know, and so that's how, you know, graffiti intertwined with that. And he started drawing graffiti on people's pants.
I like how you say graffiti.
Huh?
You make it sound French, graffiti.
Well, I'm living in, I'm from the Bronx, right? I'm from the Bronx, but I'm living in Texas now, so you're getting the best of both worlds, right? So you're getting the best of both worlds. So what happened is that he started drawing on the pants and the dungarees, you know, the eight ball jackets and all that stuff. And on my DJ's car, DJ Breakout on the Doom Buggy, he started doing graffiti on Doom Buggies and cars, and that's how graffiti came over to hip hop culture as one of the elements for hip hop culture.
I want to look at graffiti and eat linguine.
Hey Bun, can you tell us a little bit about your coming up, your first sort of engagement with hip hop? Like, I always ask that to New York artists, but growing up in Texas, what was your first engagement with hip-hop culture?
That's a great question, actually. So I had a stepmom that was really into music, and she would keep a lot of music around. And it was a mix of music, right? So there was some hip-hop, early hip-hop thrown in there, but then there was also, like, Millie Jackson and Dolemite and, like, real wild shit, right? You know, so as hip-hop started to become more reflective, I was like, okay, well, the shit they were making then is kind of like this, but with different beats and all of that. But I think for me, it was obviously The Message was the first record that I was like, damn, broken glass everywhere. What the fuck are these people living in, right? Like, we had projects. We had projects. It was crazy, but it wasn't broken glass everywhere, right? You know what I'm saying?
People pissing on the steps, you know, they just don't care.
But they were painting pictures, right, of where they lived at. And the more you listen to it, like me being in Texas in the small town of Port Arthur, I'm like, yo, it's shit happening in L.A. that kind of sound like it's happening here. It's shit happening in New York that kind of sound like it's happening here. I just don't get those words, right? And then you start meeting people. You start to break down the lexicon. Oh, that's what that mean? We just call it, like, stabbing a nigga. So that's what buck 50 mean. That's what, okay, all right, cool. And then you start, oh yeah. And then the Ghetto Boys made the song, you know, The World is a Ghetto. And we realize that everything that we're doing, everybody else is doing, we use different words. We say it a different way. We say graffiti, right? But we all know what we're talking about. But I wanted to be an active part of it, right? I came in as a fan with a real big appreciation of lyricism. And I was like, one day, like, I saw Microphone Fiend. I was like, I want to be cool like that. Right. Like the video, black and white, walking with the light, had the little dude with the chain. I said, I'm going to get old. I'm going to have kids. My little man going to have a gold chain. We're going to be flying. All that type of shit. You know what I'm saying? But it was something that I felt like I had to be a part of. It felt so different from everything else that everybody was doing. And there was a clear entry point for me to get in. So I started out actually breakdancing first. You know what I'm saying? Like, my move was a suicide because I was a big dude.
You used cardboard?
Yes, yes.
Oh, hell.
I remember going to Breaking 2 and we just started breakdancing in the movie theater.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we just started battling in there, you know? But when I picked up the pen and I started writing, and I was trash. To be very real, my first rhymes were trash. They were garbage. But I was on beat, which is better than half the niggas in the group I was with. They didn't even know how to rap to the beat. But I wanted to be a great MC, right? I wanted to be where if I ever did go to New York and I met somebody that I looked up to, like a Big Daddy or a Kool G Rap or Biz Markie or Mass Ace, I was a big Juice Crew fan, obviously, because they were like one of the people that perpetuated 808 bass, right? And in South, bass was a big part of the culture. So it was very easy for us to enjoy New York music. But I wanted to, when I met MCs, to be like, yo, you can rap. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't, and when I started rapping in 88, it was not about getting money. It was not about being rich. I never knew if I would ever make any money off of hip hop. I didn't know if I would ever put a record out, but I wanted people to say I was a dope MC. And here I am 32 years later, still beating niggas up on the mic. Still. You know what I'm saying? Still.
Cash and burgers. Can we add burgers to the hip hop element?
the number one burger in America.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and I do burgers too.
Let's make some noise for Trill Burger.
By the way, if you've never been there, it's one of the coolest spots in the world. Like, you go there, you can just chill out. No one's gonna bother you. They're just so used to stars there. Like, everybody's VIP. It's like, I stayed online like a regular person. I paid my tab like a regular person because I am a regular person. And it's a great spot. But the thing about it is, when you think about, that's hip hop. Like, that shit is hip hop. Like, it almost should be on every, you know, on your rider. Like, on your writer, like, I don't even care if you don't go to Texas Radio. I don't, not to just sit on the radio, I don't even care if you don't, you go straight to Trill Burgers and get your hip-hop experience on.
No, because there's hip-hop music playing, there's murals on the wall, like, you know, we try to make sure. For me, it's about cultural experience, right? We all representatives of the culture. We all inherently carry culture with us. So we, every time we come outside and people meet us, we may be the only representation of hip-hop that they see. Right. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like my restaurant, it may be one of the first cultural buildings that they may come to and actually experience a hip-hop environment. Right. So I needed to look like it's Trill. I needed to feel like it's Trill. I needed to sound like it's Trill. But we already know the burger tastes Trill. But that's what I want. When somebody from New York or Miami or L.A., whatever, when they come down, they should feel like I'm in Houston right now. I'm in Bum B shit right now. Right. You know what I'm saying? Because that's all we do is provide cultural experiences for people. We're these cultural conduits to the world.
And I'm sorry to say that, but because so many people, besides Jay-Z, rappers would never be the entrepreneurs. They would always say that we was the stupid people who signed these contracts with perpetual long deals.
Yes.
And we were signing like this. I know people that still signed to their contract right now, and people don't get a chance to have a second career. So, you know what I mean? Or some of us, a third career, you know what I mean? Like, so just to see you in the culinary arts, what is that called? Culinary.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it's really a cultural brand, right?
Yeah.
Because what happens is, as we go out into the world and we become more influential, whatever, we're carrying cultural equity with us.
Right.
And typically, that cultural equity is always co-opted by the sponsors and record labels and whatever. They basically try to pay us a bunch of money to sell their products so that we don't turn around and use this cultural equity to sell our products. You know what I'm saying? And that's where the real transition comes in, when we realize the real power we have. Well, if I'm doing this for them, if they're paying me 500 racks to promote this product, they're going to use my cultural equity and they're going to make millions. So I got to get my hands on a product that I can sell to the people and get my own millions. So I found my burger, and I encourage everybody to take the cultural equity that you inherently carry as a representative of this culture and find your burger.
Now, Kaz, at what point did you realize that this thing that you guys were doing back in the late 70s could one day become something that has cultural equity and leads to millions of dollars? Like, was there a moment when you went, oh, this thing's gotten way bigger than I even realized?
Yeah. People ask me all the time, did you ever feel or envision that hip hop would grow to the, you know, to the extent that it has? And I honestly answer like, hell no. I'd be stupid if I say, yeah, I knew it was gonna be this big, and I have no equity in it. I have, except for who I am. Yeah.
That's equity though.
That's a piece, but it's a lot of people.
You would have been more proactive.
If I'd have known, I would own hip hop. Okay.
Right. You could not
have a hip hop chicken store or a hip hop clothing store or a hip hop. Hip hop is the biggest culture in the world. It's the biggest business in the world, and it's the only business you can get into without answering to nobody.
Yeah. Mm. Thanks.
You ain't gotta answer to nobody to say your product is hip hop.
Facts.
You don't got to be certified by nobody. There's no governing board of the culture of hip-hop. It's just a free-for-all. Now, what other industry, whatever conglomerate, boxing, whatever corporation do you know?
Just hip-hop and boxing.
That you could just walk into and benefit off of, you know what I mean? So in that sense, that's why it's grown to the proportions that it has. And had I known, I definitely would have taken a stake in it. But we were part of developing it. It was in the process of being done. We were in the creative process. We wasn't looking on how to market it to the masses or how to mass produce it. You know what I mean? We were individuals all trying to make a name for ourselves in the Bronx. You know what I mean? Or wherever we were.
So did you, when people started really blowing up, when the first rap stars started happening, right?
Well, I'm getting to that. Yeah. I'm getting to that. The first time I knew, okay, there was a couple of signs that showed me, okay, this is going past what we're doing right here. The first thing was in 79 when Rapper's Delight came out. Yeah. Okay, when the first commercialized rap song came out, and we knew, okay, this is going somewhere past where we thought. The second one for me was the movie Wild Style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we did the movie Wild Style, it was like a stamp of validation from outside, like, yo, that shit y'all doing is valid. Right. It's cool. I don't care what people, because hip hop in the beginning wasn't like, oh wow, what's that thing you're doing? That's great. People was like, what the fuck is wrong with y'all?
Turn that shit down.
Right, turn that shit down.
Why y'all in the park?
Why are you scuffing up your sneakers, spinning around on the floor?
You're not supposed to connect to that lifeboat, sir.
What is you saying? You know what I mean? That's not music. That's all we heard. Yeah. Okay, but the fact that it, you know, it got past all that and grew to the proportion that it is a testament to the power of hip hop. And like Bun B said, you know, find your burger, okay? Because we all got a stake in this culture, especially us that been here the longest.
And one thing I think that there needs to be a distinction made between the culture that is hip hop and the industry that monetizes hip hop, calling itself hip hop.
Yes, indeed.
But isn't that EFN like the hip hop union that we've been talking about? Like that's what me and EFN, like when we first started our shit, we felt like, you know, every other job that you have, like you have pensions, you have shit like that, like, and there's people who put in time in hip hop, and I feel like
with that equity that Bun's talking about,
I feel like every artist, you know what I mean, should go to like build a damn near a trust fund. Like, I don't know how much money it is, but you know what I'm saying. So if anybody ever gets sick, anybody ever like needs something, like I feel like we should have a pension. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, after 25 years you're in here, you should get a big ass check, or you know what I mean? Like, and your family should be straight. Like, no one in hip hop.
But the problem is that everybody within the culture agrees with the concept, but the funding has to come from the people that monetize the culture.
Right.
And we're never gonna get the labels to agree on that. So unless we, the actual practitioners, take it upon ourselves to protect each other and help each other, it's never
going to work. I want to add to that,
Nori, because you have Curtis Blow, you have Chuck D, you have Special Ed, they have the Hip Hop Coalition, that is what they're trying to do right now. Okay. So they're still trying to form, you know, similar to, you know, a union. Like KRS-One is a part of it too, MC Lyte is a part of it too, so they're still trying to form it to ensure that exactly what everybody is saying, it does come to fruition.
Because if you go to Hollywood, like, there's funds for actors. There's literally a house in Hollywood where when actors, it's a big mansion. Yeah. And when actors get old and they can't afford to pay rent, you can go and live in this house. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, no, it's a big, nice house.
We should stay at the Wu Mansion then.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, but again, everybody has to figure out what their level of participation is going to be. Do we make the Jay-Z's pay more, right? Do we make the Scarlips pay less, or do we just have a general amount, right, that everybody contributes to, and then somebody's got to monitor the finance, and we all
because so many
of us inside of the culture have had such bad financial situations within the culture, have been taken advantage of by contractual law, so we come in with a lot of apprehension about money, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to take literally the same way that we have this diverse group of individuals representing the culture here, we need hip-hop lawyers. We need hip-hop accountants, right? Like, that's part of the culture, too. Somebody's got to help protect us from the vultures. And they're out there, and it has to be equal to the B-boys, the graffiti artists, the B-girls, the guys. We just have to really find a way to agree on what the level of participation is for different representatives of the culture.
And it would benefit all of us simply because at some point, Kaz and I, we helped create this culture. And then you have Nori, and then we have you. You know, and then we have Scarlett. At some point, we're all going to get older, and we're all going to become legends, pre-legends, you know, or legends,
or
whatever.
Old school.
Yeah, or old school. We're all going to become old school and OGs. So this is to protect all of us and for the people that's going to be coming behind us.
So you said there could literally be, so you could literally be like a card-carrying member of hip-hop culture.
The only issue is if you look at like workmen's unions and Teamsters and all of that, all of the people in the union genuinely make the same amount of money.
Right.
So they're all getting the same shit pulled out of their check. We have too many varying levels of income in hip-hop. So we just got to figure out, if you're this level of rapper, you contribute this. If you're here, you contribute this. If you're independent and you get a higher profit, you know what I'm saying?
And not just a rapper.
You're going to have to kick in.
If you're a podcaster, if you're the most successful podcaster, hey man, this shit's up here.
It's my idea. I know how this works.
But you say contribute. That's true. I'm co-signing. Yes. But we have to get the corporations that has benefited and have not really given back.
That's every corporation.
The anniversary of hip hop. Every corporation has benefited.
When we talk all this hip hop, let's talk to the youngest artist in the building, Scarlett.
Make some noise for Scarlett.
When you hear all this hip hop 50 talk, what do you think in your generation? Like, and you hear, like, does it even make any sense that it's 50 years old?
Right. I thought it was really older.
Right.
I ain't that young.
Isn't that long, you know? No, we're babies.
We're babies in terms of
it's a very new, in the grand scheme of things, a new culture, a new genre, even though it's 50 years now, but it's like, think of, you know,
in comparison, right?
Yeah, classical music is hundreds of years old. Like, this is very new. And do we all look like old men to you? We look like a bunch of old freaks, right?
Yeah.
I just see legends. I'm from the Bronx, and I really like the resurgence of the Bronx in hip hop right now. There's
and
like so many
the Bronx
dope artists.
Female MC.
Exactly.
The Bronx female MC.
That's, like, you must be so proud.
I am.
This is the year of female MCs, which is crazy.
It really is.
There's so many dope girls right now.
So many. And I went to Scarlett off record, and I told her how proud I am of her.
Yeah.
Because the first thing people like to say when they know that I'm an OG and the first female MC of hip-hop culture, well, what do you think about the female artists that's out here today? And I rock with all of them. Why? Because a lot of times when we talk about hip-hop, and I said that before, people just look at the rap aspect.
Yeah.
But we are all individuals. If we all sounded alike, then it wouldn't be rap music and it wouldn't be hip-hop. So I love what you have brought to the table, especially being a new artist, because I told her when I heard her song and I was driving on the highway in Texas, and she was like, back the fuck up. Move the fuck back. You know what I'm saying? And I was on the highway like this, telling everybody on the highway, back the fuck up. Move the fuck back. Because I get it. You know what I'm saying? This is how we live, not just in the Bronx, but also in New York City. We always had that type of attitude in New York. Look, I just got up. Don't fuck with me. Let me get myself together. And I respect her so much.
People think out of New York, people think New Yorkers are rude. We're not rude. We're just in a rush. Like, do me a favor. Back the fuck up.
Move the fuck back. You know, we got things to do.
But it's also crazy to think about now where hip hop can still go, because if you look back at the last 30 years, we've had all these moments. I mean, Latifah and Moni put out Ladies First 30 some years ago, right? Wow. And you're like, wow, it's time. Fast forward, you get Lauren. Fast forward, you get Nicki. We keep going. Yeah. And it really was. This is the first year where the women have truly dominated the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Women have always been on the front line. We've always been on the front line. It's just that y'all dudes wasn't talking about it. Y'all wasn't talking point about it.
This term.
But we've always been on the front line.
Yeah, I was like, a lot of opportunity for all types of different females to come in the game. Because before, it wasn't really like that, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, now it's just, like, a whole bunch of females able to just take over and do what they want.
There's enough room for everybody.
I think they're winning because they're so different from each other, you know what I mean? Whereas a lot of the males, it's such a male-dominated, you know, genre as far as numbers are concerned, and it's pretty much the same, you're hearing the same thing constantly. So when you hear something different, it's innovative, it's bright, it's young, it wakes you up, you're like, okay, let me go over here. Right. And that's where everybody is
And that's one of the reasons why Scarlett is winning right now, because people wouldn't expect, MCs and female to come out and be that aggressive, but at the same time, you know, ladylike. You understand? Because what you did was you appealed to so many different aspects, not just the men, but the women. So your content, for every female that's out there, your content at some point has to be different. Because if it's not different, you're going to be in the realms with everybody else until you have somebody like Scarlett that came out and said, back the fuck up, move the back. And she got the attention of everybody because her content was different. And in order to stay in the game as a female artist, you got to start bringing different content. And that's how you're going
to
survive.
And she signed to the perfect label, Rough Riders.
Yes.
Perfect label. Perfect label, Rough Riders.
We all know had great success with a female artist. You know, they created the legend.
But not only that, the streets and, like, if I was to say that the first time I heard her music, I would say that was a female DMX. Yeah. I would say that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and to be with Rough Riders, I'm like, this shit is perfect. Like, this is God coming down. Yeah. Swiss Beats, you know, this is DMX coming to Swiss in a different form. I got too deep? Did I get too deep? Did I got too deep? Yeah.
But it is.
Like, just think about it. If we believe that life continues, DMX never moved on. DMX is in her spirit. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's hard. I feel like that's hard.
Another young artist who's impressed a lot of people and who just, like, from the first second I saw him, felt like he had that spirit and conscience of classic hip-hop mentality, caring about more than just the surface, is the Bay's own Simba, who's with us today. Where did you get sort of your hip-hop sensibility? Because you are not like everyone who comes along in the game.
But still very contemporary.
But right, well said. Yeah. Exactly.
First off, let me say, allow me to be patient with answering this because I'm still fucked up that Bun told me they recorded Riding Dirty in a bathroom. So, I'm still trying to put all that together. But being somebody from the West Coast, especially being from the Bay Area, we grow up with an independent mindset.
Right.
So we grow up with this mindset of, like, we could do it all. We could make the beat, we could promote it, we could write the rap. For me, a big part of hip-hop was my mom. My mom was a real estate agent that used to be a rapper. And she sold houses all around the world. So as a six-year-old kid, I knew what it felt like to be in Brooklyn. I knew what it felt like to be in Atlantic City. I knew what it felt like. I had a sister in Texas. So I seen the world a lot as a kid. And one thing I would notice was West Coast music didn't really translate the best around the world. So I was like, when I started making music, how can I make something that translate to the hip-hop culture in general? So I never was, like, obsessed with trying to impress the youth. As much as they say hip-hop is a youthful sport, I still feel like youth is very fleeting. I feel like they grow up at a point in time and they still need guidance. I was always trying to impress my peers. So when Nori came to Oakland in January and was like, nigga, you the new Nas, you listen, that gave me everything. Like, that meant more to me. That meant more to me than my first check. Because it let me know I made him proud. It let me know I made Joe Budden proud. It let me know I made Jay proud. It let me know when Bun just told me, oh, man, we did the song, I was mad about my vocals. It let me know I made him proud. So more than the money, more than anything, I came in this shit just wanting to make my peers proud and be accepted by people I looked up to.
I love your story, your hustle. I remember you told a story where somebody invited you to the studio in L.A., you had to fly to the Bay, and then you drove right back.
Yeah, Nipsey,
right?
Wow. It was the first time I met Nipsey. So I was in Atlanta. This is around 2012. or I'm just young trying to figure it out. Yeah. And I'm running around, you know, got a little money. And it was A3C Fest. And I kept hearing about, you need to go to these festivals like South by Southwest and A3C Fest and all these different things. So I was like, man, let me get a ticket and go. So me and my homies went out there. And at the time, they had this club called Compound. I don't know if it's still up. Yeah. Okay. So Nipsey was in Compound. He was like, man, what y'all do? I was like, man, I do music. He was like, next time you in L.A., hit me. I straight up lied to him. I was like, I live in L.A. You know what I'm saying? Like, I live in L.A. Like, when you going back? He was like, I'm going back Monday. I'm like, me too. Right? So I flew back to the Bay. My car was parked at the airport. I didn't even go home and got clothes. I got my car. I put gas in my car. I had a Camaro at the time. Got my car, put gas in my car, and drove straight to L.A. I got on the Grapevine. I text Nip, yeah, just landed at LAX. Where you at? He texts me back 20 minutes later. I'm downtown. Pull up. Sent me the address. Came through, and he had a wall of books. He had a wall of books. And we did a song, and before I left, he was like, I want you to pick a book before you leave, and I really want you to read it. And the book I picked was The 22 Immutable Laws of Branding. And I read that book, and it taught me how to look at myself like a product, not a person. And I got that from Nipsey.
That's something Nems does without even reading a book, probably. Man, I know Nems.
But you ever disrespect me?
Calling me a librarian.
Yo, but Nems, tell us your story, because my Nems story is just a few years ago. It was pandemic. It was during the pandemic. I don't know. Maybe we met another time at a random SOBs or whatever. But my boy Top Shelf Premium was having an event in Brooklyn, early pandemic.
Yeah.
Super spreader event, by the way. And I'm not, oh, super.
Pause.
I did all right, but something didn't do as well.
I was good.
And you were outside.
Yeah.
So I'm on the block, and I see this dude who just looks like somebody. Like, this is a super underground event. Not a ton of people who look like they have something. This dude just like, I'm like, who is this guy? He looks like a superstar. Standing outside a car, posted up. Little do I know that at this time, this man is just finishing up his garbage route, literally.
Yeah,
like, you were still on the job, right? But the look he had was superstar rapper. Mm. And then, bro, within 18 months, you became a superstar rapper. Like, how did you, just like we heard Simba's story of how he kind of figured out his brand, how did you figure out how to get the whole Gorilla Nems thing together?
It was day one. I've been everywhere I go since I'm a teenager yelling out, fuck your life. It's been my shit since as long as I can remember. You know what I'm saying? It's not nothing new. Like, when I first started rapping in, like, the early 2000s, I had a group of us, my friends, they was like, yo, what we gonna call ourselves? I was like, we calling ourselves Fuck Your Life. That's it. You know what I'm saying? If they don't like it, if they not with us, then fuck they life. You know what I'm saying? And then I started battling. I went to the fight club. You know, they told me about it. I started just beating everybody. Like, I had, like, 20 wins and, like, no losses. I beat everybody. And it started, though, with the branding, with graffiti. Before I was rapping, I was doing graffiti. Because I knew that if you saw my name on the wall, you was going to talk about me. And then when I started rapping, I'm not good at art or none of that. I just would write Nems as big as I could on any wall that I could. I kept a marker with me. And then it started just every block in Coney Island said Nems. And then every block all over the city. And then people started noticing me from that. And then the fight club shit happened. And then people thought I was just a battle rapper. But what I was doing was taking verses from songs and just beating people with it. You know what I'm saying? And I just kept going. And then I kept trying and not doing it. But I always knew that I had something. You know what I'm saying? And I knew that no matter what, you keep throwing shit at the wall enough times, shit, something's going to stick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then I went to jail. And then I got fucked up on drugs. And then it was just like, you know, one night I just had like a moment of clarity where I was like, yo, I could keep going how I'm going. I'm going to be dead by the time I'm 30. Or I could stop everything right now and live my dreams. And the next day I woke up, I ain't touched nothing since. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do nothing. I just focused on winning. And then I just kept doing it. And then I just kept
Instagram came out, just kept showing my personality, showing the people on my block, fucking with people. Just real New York shit, you know what I'm saying? We on the block every day. My era is from, I came up right before the internet, so before cell phones, right in that mist of it was coming out. Yeah. So when I used to come out, it was like, yo, if you leave your house, you can't get in touch with me. You always meet up on the corner and joke on each other. And if you don't got jokes, they're gonna kill you. You're gonna have a bad night every night. You know what I'm saying? So I just learned to be quick, like getting on people. But in New York, people don't understand. That's like a bonding, you know, that's like bonding. If I'm joking on, I'm not gonna joke on you.
It's not rude.
Yeah, it's not at all. If I don't know you, I'm not gonna joke with you. If I don't know you. If I don't like you, I'm not gonna fuck with you. I'm gonna get the fuck out of here. You know? So it just, I found a cheat code, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody thinks I'm like a comedian or nah, I'm a rapper. I've been doing this, you know what I'm saying? I've been chopping people's heads off balls. You know what I'm saying? I've been battling, beating everybody, but and I've been nice with the bars, but that shit wasn't getting me this way, so I just went this way, started joking on people and fucking with people, and then they started taking notice, and then every between every don't ever disrespect me video or bing bong side talk, I throw on a freestyle, yo, hey, hey, hey. You know what I'm saying? Take that. And then eventually.
And then the bing bong shit also.
Nah, that remember
shit
that, Cass?
No, that
remember
no,
that?
No,
we no, talked no. about you on the radio, right? Because Cass say, bing bong, what the fuck is that? So I say, Cass, watch what the fuck happened. That shit gonna go viral. Yeah. And what, probably like about the next week, bing bong, he started saying
that's
bing bong.
That's a product of straight.
I mean, it's bing bong.
Yeah. Nah, that's a product of straight hip hop. Mm-hmm. RZA, bong, bong. Right. So what I used to do is I had the merch. And I used to show it every week when I drop new shit and be like, yo, just check the new shit. Bang. Check this new shit. Bang. On my Instagram. And then one day I was like, bing, bong, bing, bong. And then people started laughing. I was like, yo, I got something. Yeah. And then Side Talk came. We did a video. And I was like, yo, I'm going to start saying that. Bing, bong, bing. And then it just took its own world. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, all right, I got something here. And then just kept doing those type of videos. And then... You know, I did the album with Scram Jones, and then we met up with Paul Rosenberg. And
congratulations, by the way. Congratulations.
All it is hustle. That's all it is hustle. Like, I knew I got something. And by this point, where we at today is like, yo, like, switch up. Like, right to where Bing Bong was, it was like I was working a regular job. But it was like, yo, I've been doing this rap shit now for probably like 10, 15 years. If I just quit now, that's like working a job, about to retire, and just saying, fuck it, I don't want my money. I don't want my retirement money. Nah, I'm going to just quit. I said, nah, I put in too much time to fucking quit. I'm going to keep doing this shit until this shit happens. And then, you know, shit happened. You know what I'm saying?
The thing you said when you said about it was just hustle, like don't underplay your success like that, because you was hustling 12, 14, 16 hours a day and then fucking off. Yes. For the other 8 hours, and that should negate all the hustling you did. Yes. You know what I'm saying? You see it all the time with people like, I work all day, I grind, then I go blow a check. Yes. You know what I'm saying? You got to have checks in the mail coming to blow a check. But at some point, like you said, I stopped doing the drugs, I stopped drinking, I stopped everything, and you locked all the way in and made hustle like your life's plan, not a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I made that's that, the difference.
Yeah. I made it fun. I made like, so since I don't drink, since I don't do none of that no more, what's fun to me is making money. When I go to the club, that's just not fun to me. When I'm getting paid to go to the club, that's fun to me. I just fucked it around in my head where it's not fun unless I'm making money. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
And then, you know, just even before this rap shit, man, I bought my mother a house, and just that's all from the grind, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm not willing to take anything less than what I want to do. And since I'm a kid, this hip-hop shit has been in me, instilled in me, since watching the fucking Disorderlies, Fat Boys, you know what I'm saying? Mm. You know what I'm saying? That was like my favorite movie back in the day.
And underrated shit, movie.
Yeah, because what happened is my father died at 4, and in Coney Island, in the project, Dwyer Gardens, my projects, you know, like, my moms would go to work, and I would just be in the crib by myself. And all day, I would just watch rap movies and listen to albums. And like, I'm like a fucking encyclopedia for hip-hop, you know what I'm saying? And hip-hop raised me. And I knew since day one, this is what I wanted to do with my life. And some people give up, you know, life happens. But I just wasn't willing to give up. Simple as that.
That's all hip-hop mentality, because I always say, lately I've been saying, if anyone asks me, my culture, my religion, my background. I say hip-hop is the answer. Hip-hop.
We say it in
drink. Yeah,
yeah, hip-hop. We say it in drink chat.
Hip-hop is the answer.
I'm a political, what is it?
Apolitical.
No. I'm Republican or Democrat. I'm a hip-hop. I'm a hip-hop-crat. I'm a hip-hop-crat, yeah. I don't know if it makes sense, but I'm just rolling with it.
Nah, I like it.
Rolling with
it. Hip-hop-crat.
Hip-hop-crat.
Sound like a drug.
Hip-hop-crat is crazy.
Fuck it.
You better brand it.
Yeah, fuck it.
Somebody take it away.
Fuck it.
You better hip-hop again.
Hip-hop-crat.
Trust me, I know.
You know.
Well, that's the power of hip hop. And then I want to say DJ Stax in the building, International Club King.
Yeah.
He's where I first heard your record, Scarlett's record. Yeah. He was playing it. We was doing an event together. And that's what the importance of a DJ is still to this day. I know everybody breaks music on TikTok and on the internet, but still there's nothing like a DJ playing a song loud in a club or at an event. And that's what this guy does, man. And he's like pure hip hop.
Stax, what was your path to finding DJing?
Oh man, I think it's a little different from everybody else in the sense of I was born and raised in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Both my parents are Haitian. But when I say Brooklyn, I say different because I feel like people from the Bronx are like, that's hip-hop, right?
You used to wear the Jamaican belt?
No. But I'm going to get into that, though. But I be feeling like Bronx is like hip-hop, right? And in Brooklyn, where I grew up at, in like Brownsville, between Brownsville and Flatbush, it was very Caribbean, like super Caribbean. So the ill part was, growing up, my older brothers, they used to run with this sound called Stone Love that you probably know about, older Jamaica, right? And my parents are Haitian, so the Haitian music was there, and Spanish music, all types of music. My father, he was like a real music collector, so it was anything from Whitney Houston to Phil Collins, whatever. Now, my hip-hop really honestly came from Queens. Because my older cousin... My older cousin lived on 112 in Springfield.
That's right.
Right? And I used to go to the crib and see the turntables and all that, and then, you know, rest in peace, like, one of his boys used to come over, and who's one of his boys was Jam Master Jay.
Wow.
So I used to be in the crib with them, and they're cursing at me, don't touch my turntables, and I'm over here sneak playing.
Yeah.
And I started realizing the difference in music, like, with dancehall and anything else, there's but so much technique you could actually do to certain things, break it down a record and all that. And with hip-hop, it was like, I could break this record down and tell a story. I could do certain things with this that I can't do with everything else. And then plus it was bars, you know, it was less singing and more, you know, words and lyrics and stuff like that. So, you know, that's where it came from with that. And then the fashion, you know, the Eric B, the Rakims, the EPMDs. And then the Queens hip-hop, to me, that really caught me was the Mobb Deeps, the CNN, you know what I'm saying, Nas, so I must say, like, first things first, just being on this panel right here and sitting amongst, like, real legends is, like, super dope, and I truly appreciate it. And I just did my homework. Like, I started just doing research on hip-hop and, like, you know, where it came from, and, you know, and I started listening to, like, West Coast and Midwest, and, you know, I started listening to, like, the Bumbies and, you know, all that. So it was just weird. So I was kind of confused for a while because I studied music. So, you know, I studied samples. Where did this record come from? Where did he get this from? And I was kind of lost for a minute, but then I started realizing where the money at. Look, the money's in hip-hop, like, not for nothing. And then the lessons are in hip-hop. Like, there's so much more to be told and learned from, to me. So I kind of just went that route, and I've been Gucci since. Like, I literally play most of the biggest festivals across the world right now. That's where I'm at with it.
What's up?
The first time you drink Ace of Spades, what was that like?
Hip hop champagne.
I was on Drink Champs. I was super excited.
Yes.
I was a mix of scared and excited. I thought
you looked a little scared walking into the room.
Yeah, I thought Nori was gonna like really throw me to the wolves, not in a bad way, but just like
he do his homework.
There's a lot of
watch him. He do his
homework. There's a lot of shit you could get from me.
I know what you're saying.
And he didn't. They didn't actually steer me into that much of it.
Right. Yeah.
Now did I know that 2 weeks later they then have one guest after another who hated my guts and would rip me to shreds? No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That wasn't planned. That wasn't planned.
They have whole clips on why they hate Peter Rosenberg.
Wow.
It's because it's been a couple.
There's been a couple.
My thing is, every time I would link with Nori, I've only really spent like 5 extended periods with Nori. The third one was Drink Champs, right? But the first 2 times, pissy drunk.
What?
Just in general interaction. Like, I went to his projects. That's I got there by like 5 in the afternoon.
Yes.
I ain't leave till like 3 in the morning. And we just out. We drinking champagne. We drinking Armadale. We just on the block. Niggas getting slapped. Yes. Niggas getting fucked. It was hilarious. That shit was hilarious.
Yes.
Just pissy drunk. So then when I get ready to go to Drink Champs, I'm like, I'm finna do this interview.
Right.
Knock it up 80, 90 minutes. I'm not doing all of that. 3 hours later, like, my interview with him in Drink Champs is literally 2 hours and 45 minutes. And we try to stop from like 90 minutes all the way. And we just, the show restarts like 3 times. Cause it's like, you know what, let's do this. Bun, let me ask you this. And then I'm like, what's up?
I'm gonna be honest with you.
Let's go.
Yeah, Ben, keep it real. This is when we was learning ourselves.
Yeah, like, we were just learning.
You and the Beat Nuts. We fucked up on, like I can't wait to, like, redo our episode.
Yeah,
we
gotta have
now,
you back.
Now I got our shit together. Now I'm actually articulate with this motherfucker now. Like, before when we were doing, like, me, EFN, and Fat Joe just put a mic in front of us and started talking. And then we threw the episode out, and it was like, everybody likes this. Like, we don't understand that us just talking to each other is gold. I kid you not. I know I'm gonna sound like
We knew something.
But let me say
something. Between you and Fat Joe together, that's like a 4-hour episode.
But look, I'm gonna tell you.
It was.
Nas had hit me. I forget what period career this was. This is, all right, this is the time where Talib Kweli, Mos Def, and who else was on that cover?
Oh, what? You mean the Source Cannabis? Cover. You mean, you're talking about no. What are you talking about?
The Source cover. It was like Backpack Hip Hop.
Okay.
And
Common, maybe?
I don't remember. It was like, and Nas came. We met up, and we was just talking. And he was just like, "How you feel about the cover?" I was like, "He was like, "Yeah." And then we was just talking, and then we talking, and then he said to me, he predicted it. He said, "Yo, one day, I don't know if he said one day they're gonna pay us for our conversation, or one day they're gonna pay you for your conversation. I forget." And then I remember that I was like, "Holy shit!" And then you assholes kept letting me go up to the motherfucking morning show and y'all let me talk. And then I realized I knew fucking Hot 97's number, 1-800-223-9797. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm working for them and I don't even know it.
So you found your trail burger.
Yeah, I found my trail burger. Yeah, I definitely did.
But
I found my Spanish trail burger first.
Nori's key to success is that Nori might be the most genuine person in hip-hop. And when I mean genuine, I've known Nori through all these different stages of his career. Mm-hmm. Same exact dude.
True.
Wild words made up on the spot. Lots of drinking involved. Gregarious conversation. Big personality.
Right.
Comes in a room and takes it over. That's always been a part of that. Right. But also, Nori has been ridiculously underrated as a man in this fucking game.
Make some noise, goddamn.
Everybody put a wall around him and a roof over him that never held.
Right.
Nori was not supposed to go as far in hip hop as he went, but he still had bigger records than niggas with way better bars.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because personality.
Right.
Like, people genuinely want to be in your company.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because the only difference between going on Drink Champs and hanging on the corner with you is microphones and cameras.
Yeah. It's true.
You know what I'm saying? That's the only
difference. Well, it's 100%.
Going to your show is like going to the barbershop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I know Nori. I always say Nori was my first rapper friend. We were almost the same age.
Right.
The first rapper that was successful that was my friend is Nori. And I met so many artists through Nori before they were ever big. I met 2 Chainz in your studio before he was big.
Yep.
Lil Wayne.
Yep.
Project Pat.
Yep.
David Banner.
Yep.
All was in the studio with Nori because he didn't worry about wherever they was from. He showed love to everybody that came through.
Yes.
And like, you came to New York and he would pick you up, or you come in the studio, he got weed for you, he'd take people to the tunnel or the club. And it's like, everything he's doing now, exactly like he said, he's always been the same.
Right.
It's just, you know, I guess EFN gave him a little direction, like, hey, do it this way. And then,
Yeah, but by the way, while we're giving out.
talk right into it.
Although he still can't get him talking to the microphone, but still. But while we're giving out flowers to people just being the same people all the time, I was literally just having a conversation with someone yesterday about, like, as radio people, and really the three of us as DJs and radio people, it's kind of a similar thing. Like, our relationships with people have ebbs and flows, and there are people that you're super close with for a time. 9 times out of 10, when they reach a certain level of success, I'm sorry, they get funny. Yeah. Right. And they stop returning the calls, the number goes green, you never hear from them again. Right. We are sitting amongst the two most normal, non-weirdo motherfuckers in the history of the game, between Bun B and Nori. Right, right, right. There's not a stage that I've been in, anything I'm dealing with, where people are saying shit about me that you guys don't pick up the phone and show love. Right. And, like, I'm just sorry, a lot of your peers, they may be great in many ways, they don't hold on to that quality, though, which is endearing.
Yo, that goes a long way. Yo, that goes a long way in hip-hop, because getting in this game, I meet legends that I came up listening to, and you meet them, and you're like, this dude's a fucking corn. You're like, now I understand why they was dissing you your whole fucking life. You know what I'm saying? But then you meet genuine people that might have not been your favorite, but you're like, I fuck with him so much.
Right.
Just because the energy and the love that they show, and it goes a long way just being yourself. That's is a big part of, like, you know, listen, if I try to embody that because I meet the legends like Bun, and I meet Nori, and they genuinely who they are and who you think they are. Because so many times in this rap game, you meet rappers that you think who they are, and they're nothing like that.
Nope. But if I could say something to that, because earlier you talked about the coalition, and the reason why coalitions in hip-hop don't exist is because people have not found the right circle yet.
Yeah.
It's hard to find the humility and the genuine people that can actually come together in a trustworthy and create a trustworthy journey that people can trust.
And set the
and so, like,
aside.
The concept of building a coalition has existed for many years. Mm-hmm. But the reason why...
Union, or whatever.
Coalition
sound like we mafia.
Either way, right? At the same time, the reason why it doesn't exist is because everybody can talk about it, but very few can actually do it.
Absolutely.
What Bun shared about, like, financial freedom or creating financial equity, like, who's talking about that? Nobody is. And the reason is, everyone's thinking it, but very few can actually come together to do it because,
doing what you're doing for you.
Exactly.
Right? And start executing for us. And everybody, quite frankly, just isn't. Take finance out of it. My people's mentality is not built around them taking things away from themselves for the greater collective. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because a lot of us come from circumstances where we never had nothing. Then we finally get it, and you like, why should I share it? You know what I'm saying? With people that won't even appreciate it. So it just, you got to find that inner circle, a diverse group of people from all walks of the culture, right? Represent all walks of the culture that we trust. Right. Like, just people that we trust. But like you said, most of these niggas ain't even who we think they are. They're not who they present themselves to be. And you get them in a room and you talk about some real shit and they ain't got no conversation for it. You know what I'm saying?
But I'm glad you brought up the entrepreneurship, because that's one of the things that the younger generation said. Okay, y'all don't kick, the older OGs don't kick the ballistic to us. Mm-hmm. They don't taught us how to move. Only thing they say to us is, you shouldn't be rapping like that. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. And this is how we bridge the gap between the younger generation, you know, and the older generation, you know, to kick those ballistics and let them know, okay, this is how you move. You want to be a rap artist, be a rap artist. But take that money that you use and put it into something else, because you may not always be that rap artist. So you have people here today to be able to kick those ballistics to the younger generation and say, look, you know, we're going to give you the knowledge, but you have to take the knowledge. We're not talking at you. We're just talking with you. You just have to listen. Now, you don't have to take everything that we say, but just take it into consideration, because what we all may have went through with different
experience.
Right. We have the experience.
But some older artists don't want to connect with younger artists.
And they should.
Like, I'm going to be very honest, right?
They should.
A lot of older artists, and I'm talking about my generation, before we even get to Kaz's generation, my generation, right? They look at what newer artists are doing, the level of success that they're attaining, mm-hmm. the amount of money they're making mm-hmm. for doing basically the same thing we did. Mm-hmm. And in some people's minds, we did it better, but they made more money for it. That's just a sign of the times.
Right.
That's got nothing to
Absolutely.
Do with it. When you take the money out of it, we're all fighting the same struggle
Absolutely.
To yeah. get somewhere.
And one thing I could say is, like, a younger artist, like, for real, like, all the OGs really, like, been, like, supporting me, you feel me?
Of course.
And, like, giving me advice mm-hmm. and stuff like that, like Snoop Dogg, mm-hmm. Busta Rhymes, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
So one thing I'm noticing
is, like, when it comes to artists like me and Scarlett who feels nostalgic, mm-hmm. y'all open.
Right.
Y'all
right.
give it to us because we fit the criteria of what y'all facts. Feel like hip hop's supposed to look like. But when it's and we respect that, but when it's like a younger person that ain't necessarily speaking when we right. speak, y'all alienate them. And then that fucks up the culture as a whole. Not saying
not
either.
Everybody.
You know what I'm saying?
Not
just saying
everybody.
As in general.
I was looked at in my early years. What UGK was doing in 92 was not popular.
No.
Right? We were not looked at. We were not included in shit. You can go back and look. There's no videos. There's no music videos because the record company didn't want to make them because they didn't think people were going to like us. There's not a lot of magazine shit. My first magazine cover was 22 years after I started. You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't trendy to embrace Southern artists on the East Coast at that time at all.
And
it
so
wasn't trendy.
I can look at an artist and realize they're getting a bum rap just on how they present themselves. Like, I was with Sexy Red on Friday at Rolling Loud. Sweet girl. Beautiful girl. You know what I'm saying? People look at her approach as being different. No, that's always existed.
Exactly.
That's always existed. Hip-hop has always had this idea of reclaiming their bodies and their identity,
exactly.
right? That comes from slavery, right? People came out of slavery, they either wanted to recapture their soul because they felt broken and they went to the church, or there were people that wanted to reclaim their physical body because they've been raped, they've been slaved, indentured servitude, all of that, and those people went to the Jew joint. So both of those are equal representations of the black experience in America and the experience of people of color in America. So we can't look down at people who aren't bar-centric, right? Because that doesn't mean that they're the best people for the culture. They're just better at what they do. But maybe that's all they can do is rap. That's it. They're no good out of any other part in their life. So for me, if somebody isn't necessarily purely lyrically driven, then there's got to be other aspects of their personality that people are gravitating to. And we have to look at that and see, like, well, maybe there's a part of life that I didn't experience based on where I grew up or my age that they're experiencing, and this person vocalizes that.
Yeah.
We got to be open to that, because we were talking about crack and shit like that when it was not a popular thing, but it also wasn't everywhere.
And then y'all OGs were saying the same thing. Oh, we ain't with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
That's a generational gap, right?
Exactly.
That exists in society, period. It's got nothing to do with music. Your mom's music was crazy to your grandmother. Your music is crazy to your mother. Your kids' music is crazy to you. That's a generational gap. We shouldn't be on the same shit at 50 with 18-year-old niggas. We should not be on the same page on no level other than just bettering our situation. That's the only thing I should have in common typically with a young person is drive, momentum, hustle, you know what I'm saying? Locking in on your goal. So if we can't connect on the music, we can't connect on the content, that's cool. I'm not supposed to like everything young people are saying, right. but I'm supposed to support most of what young people are doing.
My mom did not understand me listening to Brand
My
New.
My mom still don't know who Bubby is. My mom don't know who I am in this
in
world.
In the same way.
She know I make rap music, but I send my mom money. She's like, don't send me that. That's too much.
The same way that you just broke that down is how we look at it as younger artists. So it's like me personally, when Nas dropped last night, I felt like I had to be the first to support it. When Hov dropped 444, I feel like I had to be the first to support it because these are people that showing me how to exemplify myself as a man.
Right.
But when I get the 47-year-old rapper that's still talking about being on the block, fucking five girls and doing all, nigga, you got a fucking wife with five kids. Tell us about that. What's life like that like? I don't want to hear you competing with me.
They're trying to talk to you, and they shouldn't be talking to you.
Exactly.
They should be talking to people that were 18 when they were 18.
Exactly.
That were 25 when they're 25. Because where I'm at in life is pretty much where everybody that started with me is in life. So the minute I stop trying to connect with them about where we are now, that means I want some of what y'all got. And I'm never going to get it. I know every young rapper out here. I can go get a verse from any person. But do people really want to hear that? If I go get a verse from Future, and I could go do that, do Future fans want to hear me with him? No. Do my fans want to hear me with Future? No. Can we mutually agree but still have respect for each other?
But do all of us want to see Future go to Trill Burger? Yes. You know what I'm saying? That's the shit I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. That's why I love you.
Can I ask a question real quick? What about the other side of it?
Hold on. Let me say something, though.
Okay.
Let me say something. Sorry. A lot of times, an OG will come and approach a young artist. And because it happened to me when I was the young artist. When I was the young artist, and this is DJ Chubby Chubb from such and such. Like, okay, what's going on, Chubby Chubb? And they sitting there and they talking, and then I can't identify with him because it's just we from different eras, right? So I'm like, all right, cool. And you know, everybody you don't know, like, we didn't know every single person in the NBA. He was a fan of Chicago Bulls, but you can't name every motherfucker on the goddamn team. So that shit happened to me until I became the OG. Then I was walking in and people was like, well, who the fuck is this nigga? You know what I'm saying? Like, the young niggas was like, yo, okay, what's up, Nori? But what I had to do was I had to recreate my whole shit. I was like, oh shit, I had to start wearing these jewelries for these people, something for them to identify, something for them to be like, oh, okay, I don't know this old motherfucker, but he got on a nice watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he got on something like
that. He must have been good at what he did.
And sometimes that's the way to relate to them, because a lot of times I don't relate to all of them. What you said we accept, you know, y'all three because y'all got bars and y'all things like that. But a lot of the times we don't even know how to approach you because y'all energy wasn't the same. Like, we wanted to meet Michael Jordan. Like, Allen Iverson wanted to meet Michael Jordan, then cross him over. But he wanted to meet him first. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, now I'm an elder statesman, I don't feel like the young generation be wanting to meet us. I don't feel like they want to. But they wear Jordans.
No,
they wear Jordans.
No, they do want to meet you.
They don't wear LeBron.
They do want to meet
you. They don't wear Steph Curry.
That's interesting.
They wear Jordans.
That is good. Here's the thing. Where the space is where we occupy the same space, right? And where's the level of entry for young people? A lot of times, what you think is apprehension is really like, man, I want to say something to dude,
but and I don't know how.
I don't know how to.
That's the thing.
It's really like, I'm so happy for her. I'm so happy for her because I know her crew. I know everything that she represents. So it's easy for me to say, yo, homegirl, yo, I'm so happy for you. You know, Nims, I didn't even know he was rapping. I thought I just seen him on Instagram. I didn't even know, like, he's actually a legend. I was like, damn, man. I learned that the other day. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I want to relate, but I also don't want to feel stupid.
So this is what,
like,
we
I don't
need.
I want to walk in that room and they're like, whatever.
In the same way, that Monster can put this room, right, with generational, you know, counterparts and contemporaries in here, we as a culture got to make sure that there's better entry points for these conversations.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
So we're going to tape drink chefs at Trill Burgers. What else is hip-hop? Come on. Let's make some more hip-hop products.
Oh, English. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm back in my era. I'm sorry.
Diamond chains.
Okay, hip-hop don't own that, but we gonna own it today.
Yeah. We got enough jewelers of color.
Yeah, we got enough
jewelers of color.
Donnie Gang is a color.
Yes.
And we should have a real hip-hop day, like, in every state.
No, we should have, like, a hip-hop, like, retreat.
Yes.
That'll be fire.
Rappers go to, not journalists and people like that. Like, people that are, you know, like people that are active participants in the culture.
Well, you don't have to have your ego.
Well, we need to workshop and build with each other, right? And it can't just be at, you know, on a weekend where there's parties and other shit that's going to take us away.
Has to be real shit. Like,
yeah,
like
no,
shit.
We need somewhere where we can build with studios and bars. Everything that we would want to participate and indulge in should be on the site so nobody feels like they need to leave and go anywhere. Whatever we need for us to manage 3 days together somewhere, have it there on the site. It's a, lock out the whole fucking resort.
It's a conscious
resort,
effort.
Right?
And even the young generation, because I think it's very important, you know, to include the young generation.
Simply,
yes. Well, that's what, yeah.
Yeah, simply because, you know, there's not an artist, a young artist that's out there that I don't know about. I know about every single rap artist that's out there now. Why? Because I make it my business to understand where they're coming from. Because they're really speaking some of the stuff that we lived. It's just that they're talking about it more now. Mm-hmm. And so we have to include. Hip-hop has always been inclusive. Everybody has always had a table at hip-hop. And we have to ensure, like Bun B, UGK, I knew about y'all before y'all even started making songs with Jay-Z, because I had the best of both worlds. I'm from New York, the Bronx, but I was in Texas. So I appreciated y'all even before he knew about y'all. So I think if you open up and learn about these different artists, you don't have to like what they're saying, because I don't like everything that's out there, but I respect their craft. And until we get together and bridge that gap, that is the only way that hip-hop is going... And rap music within hip hop is going to survive where we're all respecting the craft from everybody to come through.
Yeah, that's real.
Start linking up with each other.
The culture is alive and well. The business, not so much. You know what I mean? But because of the internet and because of our access to information now, everybody's better. Everybody sounds better. Everybody speaks better. Everybody knows more. Everybody's a little more in tune with everything. So we take that and we put that into like the things that we're trying to put together as far as preserving this culture called hip hop. Now I gotta bounce. I'm out. All right. I gotta. All right.
Can I ask you one last question?
Yeah, no doubt.
Before we lose you, first of all, on behalf of all of us here, thank you. You being here means this whole thing doesn't exist without you. Is there anything, as we celebrate Hip Hop 50, is there any one specific message maybe that you feel like people are not getting?
The importance of it is that we establish the foundation for a cultural movement that rivals any in history. Any war, any, you know what I mean, calamity, anything. You can put hip hop up in the same breath as anything that you can mention that happened in history. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud to be part of the fabric of that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, my brother.
Okay.
He hopping on a flight to get some more money. Yeah. Come on, goddammit.
We love you, OG.
Yes.
Can I add to one question?
And this should be how hip hop is. No one sitting in his seat.
No.
No one sitting in his seat. His seat is reserved. Put his jersey right here.
That's right.
Put his jersey right here.
I want to ask Rosenberg and Cypher a question before we get out of here.
Please.
Being radio guys that came from, you know, traditional radio, how did y'all feel about the evolution of podcasting?
They were the evolution.
I know they were, but they come from...
Okay, so basically, do you guys look at podcasting the way Kaz looks at
rapping?
Like, that's just...
Yeah, they do. Like, one of the original...
I'll be honest. Drink Champs is overcharging for what they did to the rock.
It's like you owe us for all the years that you hold us.
Listen, we started, me and Rosenberg got put on the radio by Ebro introduced us, and he said, y'all gonna do a morning show together. And we didn't know each other. So this man had the smart idea. He said, yo, let's do a podcast so we get to learn each other's personalities.
So you had like the religious marriage.
Like, yeah, basically, it was arranged. It was an arranged marriage.
They brought a boy band.
See, that's what
you're talking about. Exactly.
Boy band thing is supposed to be called arranged marriage.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that Rosenberg says and does that I hate and disagree with. And he got a lot of
I feel like that's
ops.
Overstated now.
Yeah,
but
a lot of ops.
I do. I'm a big op guy.
But why I will always defend Peter Rosenberg is for his love of hip-hop. Me and him can talk hip-hop for hours and hours and hours. And what we did, we didn't know what we were doing back then. We were lucky enough to be in Hot 97, and a Large Professor was dropping...
New Drink Champs this week, last week.
Yeah. Like, Large Professor was dropping a re-release 20th anniversary of Main Source or something. Right. So he was stopping by Hot 97, and he would always grab him and be like, "Yo, can we go in the back room and do a interview?" Which then became Wan Ep Interviews. And the Wan Ep Interviews, we were just two hip hop nerd fans getting the oral history of hip hop.
I'm gonna be honest, y'all was ahead of y'all time.
Yeah, we know that. No, we know that.
Wan Ep was like, this is what it was. Like, we were Hot 97. We trained not to curse. Like, y'all trained us. Like, I would go to Hot 97, I would think of everything I'm about to say without a curse word. Like, I would be, I premeditated every interview. And then y'all were coming in the room and be like, to the next room. It's like, we're in the principal's office. But then y'all would say, let's go to the dean's office. And then say, you could curse here.
Yeah. Say whatever you want.
We never trusted y'all. We
was just like, it was a setup.
This is a setup. At somewhere, we're going to say something. And then they were going to be banned. And then I did get banned.
Not related to us, though. Not related to us.
Yeah, but that's... I know. Jesus. Let's not talk about that. But,
No.
But that's why it came off like... I would always say, probably it's your fault, Rosenberg. I'm like, that's like, podcast is nerdy. And EFN would call me and be like, let's do a podcast. I'm like, damn, I know I helped the nerds get on. With Pharrell. I mean, we're a Billionaire's Boys Club right now. Holy moly guacamole. But I was like, maybe we're not that nerdy yet, EFN. And EFM was like, listen, I'm telling you. And then he was right.
Yes.
And I tell you what's crazy about that. I'm in L.A. one night, hanging out with Kid Cudi. Excuse me, I was with Alchemist.
It's a big difference.
No. Huge. Not even similar.
It's a big difference. No, here's what happened.
It was Frank Sinatra. No, it was Michael Jackson.
No. I'm with Alchemist, and he goes to me, let's go to this Kid Cudi show.
Okay. There we go.
At the time, I'm in hip-hop purgatory. I don't know if anybody knows what hip-hop purgatory is, but you're going to receive it at some point. And that's where you go from being, like, here to, like, down here, but you're, like, right here.
Right.
And you don't know, because if you go up, you made it. But if you go down,
so
no coming back.
It's going to the garbage. Yeah. Back to the
garbage truck.
For real, you got to realize, they get tired of us. After a while, they get tired of us, and they want to kick us to the fucking curb. That's the reason why we made Drink Champs. We want to make people that's been here so long. So anyway... What Alchemist, and he goes, let's go to this. I don't want to be seen. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm in purgatory. Like, I'm not confident. So, damn, this is ill, right? I ain't gonna lie. I feel deep telling this story. And I'm about to light a blunt and act like I don't know if we can smoke or not. I'm not sure. We're gonna figure that out later. So anyway, I walk in, and then, I don't want to say nerds, but all of these hip-hop,
Alternative.
You know? People came up to me and was like, you're the God. And I was like, why? I was like, I didn't shoot nobody over here. You know what I mean? And I didn't realize. I'm sorry, that's how I identified with being the man. Like, back then, like, you had to pop somebody. You know what I mean? But they're coming to me, and what I don't realize is they're like, you put on Pharrell. Like, the first time we seen Pharrell is, and he's our God. Yeah. And I would say, this is this whole other alternative hip-hop that Kanye and... This was like, holy... This is not gangster. There's nobody in there with a bandana, nobody quit walking, nobody... In L.A.! I'm like, you ain't gonna ask me what hood I claim? Like, you know, because I'm used to. Who you claim, nigga? Like, no, nah, holy... No, this was alternative. Did this word you use?
Yes.
Alternative.
Great word.
And... I looked and I was like, wow, there's a whole nother section of hip-hop that A Tribe Called Quest Because they attribute it to me through Pharrell, but Pharrell's not where it comes from. It comes from actually Tribe Called Quest, and then what's the native tongue? And they, well, it's all under the native tongue. And I'm looking like, holy shit, it still kind of went back to New York. But I'm in LA, and I, that's when I discovered. I don't, what is it called?
Can it be the Backpackers?
The Kanye. It's not Backpacker. No, it's not Backpacker. This is upgraded from Backpack.
It's a different.
This is a different.
They cross like a skater.
It's a Kid Cudi. Yeah. And yes, it's just
alternative.
Yes, and I realized there's other places of hip hop. Like in my day, I'm sorry, this is horrible. But if I performed and nobody got stabbed. I was like, this is a horrible show.
You're in the wrong room.
Right. So I liked it. If I did what, I wanted somebody to get what, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. I went too far, guys. I'm sorry.
I go to a show, don't get stabbed.
No, I'm so glad I don't rap no more. I'm so glad. I like... When I did Reggaeton, I was like, I'm never going back. You want me to go back to... rap? I just seen people dance all night. Hey, gasolina. Holy shit. This is no... And nobody gets stabbed. Nobody, like... Hip-hop was fucked up at one point. I'm sorry to remind y'all of that.
I know. It had nothing to do with the 90 people you walked in with.
No.
Yes. Backstage area being completely full.
Nope. It had nothing to do with me at all. I'll tell you that. What did you guys say? You got a question? I'm sorry.
I'm going to tell you this quick story before we get out of here.
Okay.
I think I'm in like the fourth or fifth grade. And I'm arguing with my teacher. Mm. Right? And I tell the teacher, I'm like, you don't understand. Like, I'm finna blow up. I don't even gotta be here. Mm. Right? So she like, what are you talking about? So I'm like, you want me to learn this and learn that when I already know what I wanna do in life? I'm gonna be a rap star.
Wow.
So she was like, where is that gonna take you? And I was like, to the moon. And she says, what? Right? And I look at her and I go, what? And the whole class starts saying this shit. To the point, I just did an interview on BET, and my mom told the story about when she got the call that I was in the class standing on top of the desk going, what?
Oh my God. So I appreciate that. By the way, greatest story ever. There's no better way to end it on this note.
And he ain't alternative.
Holy moly guacamole. This was great, man. I want to thank everybody here, even though I'm not moderating.
Put it up.
At this point, you're holding court.
Yes. Put it up. Put it up.
Shout out to Monster Energy, man, for putting this together. Toast to everybody that done this.
Yes.
I always say, like, rappers was my father when I didn't have one. Wow. So I appreciate Hov. I appreciate Nori. I appreciate Big. I appreciate Pac. I appreciate X. I appreciate Scarlett for being a female that's not hypersexualized and giving men something to shout out that women can vibe to, and we could all be in a club together. So when I'm in a club, I want to tell them to get hold the fuck up.
That's right.
Move the
back,
fuck back.
Back.
That's on us. That's hip-hop. It's the 50th year right now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.